World leaders have been congratulating Recep Tayyip Erdogan for securing a third term as Turkey's president. He defeated Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu in a runoff on Sunday, winning more than 52% of the vote. The election was described as one of Turkey's most important and closely contested in decades. Let's go live now to Sami Zeydan, who's in Istanbul as part of our special coverage of the Turkish election. Sami.
Thanks, Adrian. Yes, we're here marking this historic moment when Turkey went into its first presidential runoff election, a really important moment that ended with a win, as you pointed out, 52% for President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, his challenger Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu getting 47% of the vote. So despite his best effort to try and close that gap from the first round, he simply couldn't pull it off, with 5 points still remaining between him and President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. It's a polarizing election, no doubt, for the nation here in Turkey. But we've also got to remember that this is not entirely a domestic affair. Turkey plays a key role in a number of global affairs. First of all, you can look around the region. It plays a really important role in a number of regional hotspots, especially the tensions which exploded in the region after the Arab Spring, from Syria to Libya to Egypt to Iraq and beyond. Also, Turkey plays a very important role when it comes to its membership in NATO and the question of NATO expansion, particularly the addition of new members like Sweden. And Turkey is playing something of a balancing act in that war that's going on between Russia on the one hand and Ukraine and its Western backers on another. So this is an election that would have been watched very carefully and closely by a lot of capitals around the world, because whatever happens here, whoever is endorsed to enter the presidential palace in Ankara would have an impact on all of these affairs and beyond. A lot at stake for the world, but also a lot at stake for the candidates themselves, as I explain in this report.
Recep Tayyip Erdogan!
It's been one of the most important fights in a political career spanning three decades. A loss would have been the end of an era. A win would cement his legacy as one of the most powerful leaders in modern-day Turkey. Recep Tayyip Erdogan told a gathering of supporters to have faith in the future.
Kazanan Türk kesimleriyle.
We aren't the only winners of this election. The entire nation is. Turkey is the winner today. The victory belongs to everyone. It belongs to our democracy. The only losers are terrorist organizations plotting against Turkey. As for the responsibility bestowed upon us by our nation, there are no heartbreaks on our part. We aren't angry at anyone. Now it's time to leave all disputes behind and unite behind our national values and dreams.
The runoff vote was also a crucial moment for his rival. Backed by an alliance of six opposition parties, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu had promised to fix the economy, restore the parliamentary system, and ensure greater freedoms. Opposition parties are wrapping their minds around what went wrong. They initially thought people would vote with their wallets, that a change of heart in earthquake-devastated areas would be to their advantage. But that didn't happen. Now they need to move past anger and frustration, and perhaps consider a complete reset of the fragile alliance they built for the election.
I couldn't let our nation fall into battle with another, and I didn't do that. I couldn't allow our nation to suffer from poverty and economic challenges. For your rights, I have always fought, and I will continue to do so. We will continue to fight for democracy, and I am asking you to join us in our effort.
For now, Erdogan is celebrating. The man who's dominated Turkish politics this century faces a tough task ahead: reducing skyrocketing inflation, rebuilding entire cities, and improving strained relations with the West. The governing party and its allies have retained a parliamentary majority. That gives Erdogan enough support to deliver on the promises he made during the election campaign.
Right, we've got correspondents around this country and around the world covering this major story. We've got Hashim Ahlabarra joining us from the CHP headquarters, or the opposition party headquarters in Ankara. We also have Dominic Kane looking at reaction in Germany. Yulia Shapovalova brings us up to speed with reaction out of Moscow. But first, let's start with Rasul Sardar. He's watching things from the seat of political power. And Rasul, immediately now, we've got a new term immediately confronted with some continuing challenges. Any indications from the AK Party, from President Tayyip Erdogan, of how they're going to meet those challenges going forward now?
Sami, President Erdogan has won another election in Turkey, and they have celebrated that. But now, it is the day after the election, and the major problems of Turkey are still remained here. So, first and foremost, the economy. Turkish economy has been suffering, particularly in the last 2 years. Turkey has one of the highest inflation rates in the world. Skyrocketing prices are hurting people. Turkish people are suffering on a daily basis. So, we have heard that President Erdogan, during his victory speech, has said that he is going to create a strong and stable economy by increasing Turkey's production capacity and bringing the unemployment down. And he also has promised that he's going to establish the new business hubs across Turkey. So that was one of the issues. The second biggest challenge that's awaiting for President Erdogan is the political polarization in this country. Now we see that the Turkish society is politically deeply polarized because the politics in Turkey is quite harsh. And to consolidate their supporters, politicians usually make serious accusations against each other that further polarize the society. Yesterday, during his victory speech, so he has said when he or his party wins, no one loses. Turkey is the sole winner in this election. And these messages are being interpreted as the message of the unity and the reconciliation. Another serious issue that needs to be tackled immediately is the situation in the disaster area. So nearly 4 months ago, two powerful earthquakes have hit the southeastern of Turkey. More than 13 million people were affected. More than 50,000 people have died, and tens of thousands of buildings have either been completely collapsed or damaged. And as a result, more hundreds of thousands of people are now living either in tents or the container cities, and they are waiting for their permanent houses, accommodations. So President Erdogan is now promising them that within a year, they are going to be receiving their houses. And of course, the next 5 years are going to show whether President Erdogan is going to be able to honor his promises by actions. Sami.
All right, thanks so much, Rasul Sardar there. Let's cross the political divide, though, go to the other side, so to speak. We've got Hashim Ahlabarra at the CHP, our opposition headquarters. And Hashim, we're already hearing from different opposition figures some talk about change. We know that the mayor of Istanbul has called for a meeting tonight at Maltepe. What can we expect?
It is going to be a crucial meeting with a statement, and everyone is looking forward to hear what he has to say. Earlier today, he referred to two key figures in Turkey's history, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk and Sultan Mehmed, and he said both were young when they made quite a significant accomplishment in the history. One of them founded the modern Turkey, and the other conquered Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul. And for many, it was interpreted as an indication that Ekrem İmamoğlu is calling for a new young generation to take over the leadership of CHP. He's widely seen as the man likely to be the new leader of the party for different reasons. Now, the opposition is still grappling with answers to what happened yesterday, why they failed to resonate among a wider section of the Turkish society, why they failed to reach out to a larger number of the ultra-nationalists. And they seem to have lost some of the votes in the southeastern part of the country. And as they are grappling with answers to those questions, they do understand that the only way for them in the future is to expand the electoral map. But to do that, they will have to reinvent themselves, and they will have to change themselves before they can move forward. And this explains why Imam İmamoğlu is widely seen as one of those people, because when he talks, he resonates among the nationalists, the social democrats, and also among some of the conservatives. When it comes to the wider picture, the Nation Alliance, which is the gathering of six political parties that were united to defeat Recep Tayyip Erdogan, there is a talk about a potential disintegration of that alliance, because now many parties are weighing the merits and the disadvantages of staying together in this alliance when the tides seem to be moving towards Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the ruling AK Party.
All right, thanks so much, Hashim Ahlabarra there. A polarizing situation that the opposition have to deal with. Also a polarizing question when it comes to what to do with the Syrians in this country. Selim Kosaoglu went out and found a variety of sentiment on the street.
Turkey's presidential and parliamentary election this year has been highly polarizing the society. The most significant outcome was the rising anti-refugee sentiment and far-right nationalism in Turkey. This sentiment promises to send especially the Syrian refugees back to country, and they are against the regulation that allows foreigners to become citizens after purchasing $400,000 worth of property.
For my opinion, this is just for politicals, just for elections due. That's all. Other sides win the elections, they will not do what they say.
O para karşılığında vatandaşlık vermek.
Should it be so cheap and easy to get Turkish citizenship by purchasing property? As a nationalist, it makes me really sad.
During the election campaign, the opposition has accused the government of increasing the budget burden because of the Syrian refugees in the country. That's why President Erdogan now pledges that within the first couple of years, he will be sending 1 million Syrians back to their homes on a voluntary basis. So far, 600,000 Syrians have already left. Sinem Kösoğlu, Al Jazeera, Istanbul.
All right, so let's continue the conversation. We're going to bring in now once again Sela Demirel, Professor of Political Science at Öztürk University. Good to have you with us once again. Since we're talking there, Sinem was talking about the Syrian refugee situation. Are we seeing something of a rapprochement going to continue now between Syria and Turkey?
Well, there is actually public demand for that to happen in Turkey. Turkish people would like to see more peaceful relationship between Turkey and Syria, partly because they think that will be a solution to the refugee issue. They do not want the refugee problem to increase, and they do not also want the conflict in Syria to cause any security issues in Turkey. So it's most Turkish people feel like it's in their best interest that Turkey and Syria rebuild peaceful relationships.
Related to that, we've seen over the years a bit of a change in direction when it comes to Turkish foreign policy. During the Arab Spring, Turkey took a stand with a lot of the grassroots movements which were calling for democracy, and over time relations got really strained between Turkey and many Arab governments. And now we're kind of seeing things being patched up. Is that going to continue?
I would think so, because it's a bigger trend. I mean, Turkish politics in the Middle East during the Arab Spring displayed Erdogan's, I would say, desire to assume a more leadership role in the Middle East. But over time, we see that he was humbled down to some extent. So during the Arab Spring, Erdogan had conflicts with Libyan, Syrian and Egyptian governments, and over time we saw that he took a step back in all of these countries, in his relationships with many of these countries, and trying to rebuild a more modest and peaceful rule in the area.
And it's not just the Middle East. Turkey's playing a key role and walking something of a tightrope in the war between Russia and Ukraine, right? Is that going to continue?
I do expect that to continue. Erdogan has been branding himself as a leader that can speak with both the West and the East, both, you know, a NATO member on the one hand, but has good relations with Russia and China. In the war between Ukraine and Russia, Erdogan particularly played a leadership role and mediating role, right? I mean, his position in the establishment of the grain corridor between Ukraine and Russia, it was an international accomplishment which also had positive impact at domestic politics. So Erdogan, I think, would like to continue that. And so far, he has given signals that he plans to continue this role, a role where he can build a, you know, bridge between the two worlds.
And all of that just underscores the importance of this story of what this presidential election means for the world. Thank you so much, Seda Demiral, for helping breaking it down for us and finding oneself in somewhere between East and West, as Seda pointed out. That could describe some of the diaspora community in places like Germany. Let's go over now to Dominic Kane in Berlin and find out a little bit about the reaction there. What are you hearing, Dominic?
Well, the community in this country eligible to vote in the elections, around 1.5 million people could vote in the elections. In the event, perhaps just over half that number of people did vote. And the result from those who did vote, overwhelmingly in support of Recep Tayyip Erdogan, re-electing him as president. But there are those here who did not vote for President Erdogan. And in this part of Berlin, where I'm broadcasting from right now, Kreuzberg, there is a large Turkish community. And that difference of opinion about whom to vote for is reflected in the voices of those who we've been speaking to here on the streets of Berlin today.
I'm very happy with the election result because I think in the past 20 years, compared to the 80s and the 90s, a lot has changed for the better. Even though, of course, in the past 5 or 6 years, with inflation and the numbers of refugees, some things have changed for the worse.
It's crazy. I'm not happy. It's not a democracy anymore. There's no future for the Turkish people. But unfortunately, they don't understand that. I'm really annoyed with the Turkish people living here.
On Sunday evening, when the results became clear of how Germany had voted, indeed how Turkey had voted, then the streets behind me here in Kreuzberg were lots of people, supporters of Recep Tayyip Erdogan, were celebrating in the streets. The interesting thing is that some politicians themselves of Turkish extraction here in the German cabinet said that seeing those scenes, they were a rejection of the pluralist democracy that Germany is. That's just one view from a Green Party politician, Cem Özdemir. The Chancellor here, Olaf Scholz, has tweeted his congratulations to President Erdogan and stressed the importance of the relationship between the two countries. And other EU leaders have also congratulated the president on his re-election. Certainly Viktor Orban in Hungary, saying it was an unquestionable victory for the president. But it is worth making the point there are some who don't share that view, notably a German conservative politician in the European Parliament, Manfred Weber, who said that this election result should persuade the EU now to stop any accession talks between themselves and Turkey and to place the Turkish-EU relationship on a more serious basis with no suggestion of Turkey acceding to the EU.
All right, thanks so much. Dominic Kane there reporting to us from Berlin. It's not only, we're not only seeing reaction in places like Berlin, of course, we've seen reaction from Moscow. We can go over now to Yulia Shapovalova there. And Yulia, we heard during the campaigning, particularly from the opposition candidates, some hard words for Russia. Did Moscow breathe something of a sigh of relief at the election result?
Yeah, exactly, actually. He called on the Russians not to intervene in the elections, didn't he? So officially, the Russian President Putin congratulated Mr. Erdogan on his victory. Turkey remains the only NATO country right now that has not imposed sanctions against Russia. It continues to supply Russia with goods. Many Russians have left for Turkey since the start of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine, and the so-called partial mobilization for military service that took place in September last year. Turkey remains a principal transportation hub that connects Russia with the rest of the world, as other countries have banned flights to and from Russia due to the sanctions. In Turkey, the Russians can stay without a visa for 2 months. Therefore, quite a big number of Russians were a bit worried about a possible change in the country's leadership. And according to them, if the opposition had come to power, they could have also slapped sanctions on Russia. Also, it's widely believed that the business between Russia and Turkey is largely based on the personal relationship between Putin and Mr. Erdogan. Mr. Putin calls Recep Tayyip Erdogan his friend. And early in May, Erdogan received Putin's approval to postpone a large payment for Turkey's gas debt. Russia is currently building the Akyüz nuclear power plant in Turkey. Also, Erdogan is trying to act as a peacemaker, as we heard in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, and he maintains good relationship with Putin and Zelensky, and he managed to extend the grain deal for 2 more months right before the first round of the elections, and showed his voters his global role and his global influence. So at the moment, we see that Russia is pretty optimistic about the outcome of this election, and officially it is open for further cooperation.